Stay right there in your easy chair for 30 minutes of pleasure. Don't you go, it's more than the show. It's the talk of the desert.
It's the talk of the desert with Melinda Reed.
I just love coming home at night. I turn around, she's a treasure. Everyone and everywhere I go. The talk of the desert.
Now, here's Melinda.
You know, we have this building that's kind of East Valley that we see from Highway 111 and from Washington Street, and it's this beautiful, beautiful building called the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens. And I feel like it was built, and they was said, if we build it, they will come. But we're going to find out more about that because my special guest is Charlie Passerell, part owner of the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens, professional tennis player, and a wonderful man. Charlie, welcome to Talk of the Desert.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Melinda.
It is. It's a beautiful facility, and we are so fortunate to have that kind of facility here in the desert.
Well, that's very nice of you to say, and we feel we're very fortunate to be able to be here because it is a beautiful setting. This is God's country right here, so we couldn't ask for a nicer place to build our stadium.
Except in July in those 123 degree heat days, huh?
Well, those days don't exist because I leave town.
And that's why I have been trying for 2 years to have you as a guest on Talk of the Desert, and finally, here we are. I've had your partner, Raymond Moore, as a guest before, and he's just darling and charming, also a wonderful tennis player. But now you're Puerto Rican. How did you get started playing tennis?
Well, both of my parents were active tennis players. In fact, they both were island champions, champions of Puerto Rico, and so were my uncles and my aunts. And so I really grew up in a tennis family. And when I was about 8 years old, a wonderful teaching professional, his name is Welby Van Horn, who's actually a resident here in the desert now, came to Puerto Rico, and he taught me everything I know about tennis, and he actually really was the one responsible for, along with the support of my parents, mm-hmm. To really launch my tennis career, and I just had a wonderful time with the sport of tennis.
So what age did your parents hand you a tennis racket?
I started hitting the ball when I was about 5-6 years old, because we were always at the tennis club, and mm-hmm. so obviously I got very interested in tennis, and so... something I fell in love with at an early age and played it ever since.
This may be a stupid question, but did they have small tennis rackets for children?
What they used to do, actually, in those days was they were wood. Most of the rackets were wood.
Right.
Now they're all graphites and all kinds of alloys.
And catgut, right?
And catgut. Well, or you used to use nylon.
But, okay.
But they used to saw off, you could basically take a saw and cut off a piece of the racket and then re-grip it and you have a short racket, yes.
And but the head would obviously be the same size.
The head was the same size, but they were a little shorter, and so mm-hmm. a lot easier for the kids to handle.
Because mm-hmm. I would think sometimes your tennis racket could be taller than you were. Well, what did this, your teacher, that when you said you were 8 years old, what did he say? You said he taught you everything about tennis. Could he really teach you everything about tennis at the age of eight?
Yes. Welby Van Horn, was also an outstanding tennis player. He was a finalist at what is now the U.S. Open mm-hmm. back in 1939. He lost to somebody named Bobby Riggs. You know, remember
yes,
that name.
We all remember Bobby Riggs.
And Welby was a terrific player. He actually grew up here in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And he came to Puerto Rico to teach at the Caribbean Hilton Swimming and Tennis Club. We were members there, and so I started taking lessons from him. And Welby, as great as a player as he was, he actually, in my book, and obviously I'm a little biased, I think is the greatest teacher of good fundamentals for the game of tennis. And he's written many books. Sports Illustrated have done several articles on him. Frank DeFord did a wonderful article on Welby Van Horn's teaching methods over the last 30, 40 years. And so Welby is somebody that really understood the game and taught me good fundamentals and really gave me a good basis from which I could develop my game. Then my parents, who saw some potential in me, decided to send me to play all the junior tournaments in the summertime in the United States, and in the wintertime I used to go to the Orange Bowl in Miami and play that, and I had some good success, and that sort of kept me going.
Well, and then you ended up at UCLA.
That is correct. I got a tennis scholarship at UCLA, and Arthur Ashe was the same age as I was, and we both of us got scholarships there, and we both went to school there together and just had a wonderful time there at school.
Now, someplace I read that you guys were actually roommates.
We did. We'd roomed together at school, mm-hmm. and best friends. Mm-hmm. And so I miss Arthur, obviously.
He was
a real special human being.
Mm-hmm. And what a tennis player, too, huh?
He was a tennis player, but I tell you, Arthur's greatness goes far beyond the tennis courts. What he did for so many people, it's incredible.
It's the human being he was, right?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now, you also had a championship that you won back in college, too.
Well, I had my wins here and there. I was NCAA champion. Mm-hmm. Won both the singles and the doubles, and won the national indoor championships, national juniors. And, so I had a good career. Got ranked number one in the United States in 1967. So, I had my share of wins.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, what age did you decide to retire, or have you really retired from playing tennis, or maybe professionally, huh?
Well, one day you sort of wake up and you start looking at what you have done lately on the tennis court, and your results are not too good. And you say, maybe it's time for me to start doing something else. And interesting, I was living in the desert at the time. And a very famous tennis player and a famous resident of this valley, again, the person we missed dearly, Ellsworth Vines, Ellie Vines, mm-hmm. Who was a Hall of Famer in tennis. He actually called me on the phone, and he says, would you like to have lunch with me, Ellie, and Ernie Vossler today? And so I said, sure. So I went over and joined them for lunch, and he said, we've been checking out your results lately, and you're not doing too well. And on the tour, so I said, we just want to know whether you would like to come and work for then the company called Landmark, mm-hmm. Who owned the La Quinta Hotel and was about to buy Mission Hills and doing development. So I said, that sounds like an interesting thing. And so it was a wonderful thing that Ellie and Ernie did, because I think one of the toughest things an athlete has to face is, one day, as I said, you wake up and you realize, man, this free ride or this wonderful life is over. And but I was able to get a good transition into really getting into the business world.
Business of tennis, right?
Yeah, business. And they actually made me director of tennis for Landmark Land. Mm-hmm. And it was there was a tennis tournament that had been played at the Mission Hills Country Club for many years, and they were about to move it. In fact, it actually did get moved. But I then, at the same time, and I then went out to the powers to be in the world of tennis and said, you're going to move that tournament out, but we would like to have another tournament here at La Quinta. So the tournament went from Mission Hills to La Quinta, mm-hmm. and we held a wonderful tournament there for 6 years. And had it not been for Ernie Vossler or Ellie Vines and those people, I don't think the tennis tournament would have been here. Mm-hmm. I think it would have left.
Well, I was just going to say that I heard a comedian recently say that he's at the age of where he goes to bed feeling fine and he wakes up ill because of all the way the bones and the muscles creak, just relating to that, kind of when the body starts to tell you that things may not be going as well as they used to be. But now, okay, so you've got this this tennis match or tennis tournament, and you're at Indian or
we were at La Quinta.
La
La Quinta Hotel. That's correct.
And what was the title of the tennis?
Well, those first years we had Congolian Corporation, so it was called the Congolian Classic. Mm-hmm. For 3 years that we had Congolian as a sponsor, and so that was the first 3 years, and then it changed to Pilot Pen. And so we've actually had really in the history we've only had four sponsors: Congolian, Pilot Pen, Newsweek for a very, very long time, and now Pacific Life.
Mm-hmm. But some way you ended up at the Hyatt Grand Champions.
Well, what happened was after about 4 years being at La Quinta, I realized that we needed a bigger stadium. And then I also met a bunch of crazy guys who, and I say crazy because we had a great time, and we ended up buying the piece of property of now where the Hyatt sits, and we built a hotel. That actually we wanted to build a tennis stadium, but in order to finance a tennis stadium, we had to build a hotel. That's the only way we could do it at that time. So we built a hotel with a tennis stadium, and we moved the tournament then there from La Quinta. We moved it to the Hyatt, and we held it there from 1987 through 1999.
Now, when did you meet Raymond Moore?
Exactly when we did that, when we made that move from the La Quinta mm-hmm. event to the Hyatt Grand Champions. Raymond, who's a little younger than, even though he doesn't look it, but he's...
Wait a second, I read someplace he's only 3 years younger than you are.
Right, well, yeah. he's younger than I am. But Raymond decided, he came to that realization that maybe his playing days were also over, mm-hmm. and just like I had done a few years earlier. And so he, I said, well, come here. He was living in the desert. I said, why don't we become partners, and we're going to build this hotel, build a much bigger stadium, and come and work with us. And Raymond joined as a full partner, and we've been partners ever since.
Yeah. Well, I think Raymond was a guest on Talk of the Desert a couple of years ago, and as I remember, he was number one in South Africa.
Yes, he was.
Because he's from South Africa. And then was ranked sixth or seventh in the United States?
Well, no, he in the world.
In the world,
he was
okay.
One, yeah, he was... Raymond, was a top 10 world ranked player, and he was an outstanding tennis player. Had wins over the great ones, Rod Laver, etc. I mean, just a great player.
Now, do you two play tennis together?
We try not to. Together, we used to play against each other, but actually, I hate to admit it, but I never beat Raymond, and it's something that he never has made me forget.
I bet.
But, in competition, but we've had many gruel matches in practice and everything. But now we don't do that. Sometimes we play doubles together. But I enjoy competing against Raymond. We enjoy it, and sometimes we carry that over to the golf course too.
Oh, so golf has come into your life
because
you live here in the desert, huh?
How can it not? So.
Well, when we come back from the break, Charlie, we're going to talk about this vision you had further east in the valley, which has now become the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens, how that's developed, and then talk about the Pacific Life Open coming up here in March. How many years have you been doing the... It was Newsweek, and then it was Pacific Life Open at the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens?
Yeah, and Pilot Penn, and it started in 1981. That was my first year.
Okay, but what year did you open the tennis gardens?
We opened the tennis garden in 2000.
That tournament has been Pacific Life Open ever since it's been at the tennis garden?
There was a period there we did not have a title sponsor.
Okay.
And then Pacific Life has been a sponsor the last 4 years.
Yeah, okay. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about those things. We'll be right back with Charlie Passarell. She's the
talk of the desert. Don't touch that dial. Melinda and her guests will be right back. The talk of the desert. Now, more from Melinda and Charlie Passarell from the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens.
I was thinking about having Charlie serve me a tennis ball, but I decided that wasn't going to work on my set here on Talk of the Desert. Charlie, let's talk about the development of the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens. So you go from the Hyatt Grand Champions and this vision that you, Raymond, I don't know how many other people had.
Well, it was really primarily Raymond and I that mm-hmm. had this vision. When we built the stadium at the Hyatt Grand Champions, we said, boy, this is it. And it was then one of the biggest tennis stadiums in the world. And I said, this is the stadium. We'll be here forever. It only took us about five, six years, when we were there that we realized that the stadium wasn't big enough. We didn't have enough parking, enough restrooms, enough concession stands, and enough courts. And we really wanted to take this tournament to the very next level. And in order to do that, we had to find a bigger facility. And
how many seats were at the Hyatt Grand Champions?
Well, about 10,500.
Mm-hmm, really?
And so the demand was so great for tickets, but as I said, we just didn't even have enough support facilities,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and so we had to move. We had to enlarge the stadium, and so we started looking into how could we do that. We got phone calls from Las Vegas, from Arizona, from Orange County, but we really wanted to keep the tournament here in the desert, mm-hmm. and we had an opportunity then to buy the land where we are now. And we teamed up with IMG, International Management Group, and we formed a joint venture partnership, 50-50, and we ended up buying the land. And basically designing and building a stadium that it is the second largest tennis stadium in the world today. Only New York's Arthur Ashe Stadium is larger. And
really?
So it's a facility that I truly believe will be there for the rest of our lives.
Sounds like it. And you've got now enough restrooms and food facilities.
Oh, we make sure, yeah. You'll be surprised about how those things have become important, but they are important.
Yeah. I've been in some of your VIP
suites,
and they're just absolutely lovely. Yeah. It's fun to watch the tennis that way, too.
It is. It's a very comfortable way to do that. And we actually were the first tennis stadium to start putting suites into the tennis stadiums, and we did that at the Hyatt. And subsequently, almost all the stadiums, mm-hmm. including the U.S. Open Stadium, every one of them is now building suites.
Well, you need to be a leader here in Indian Wells, right? Now, talk about the how the tournament has evolved over the years.
Well, I knew that in order to have what I call a major event, we had to emulate what the Grand Slams are doing, the Grand Slams being the U.S. Open, Wimbledon, Roland Garros, the French Open, and the Australian Open. And so I wanted to combine a men's and the women's competition, because tennis as a sport, in terms of where co-ed sport, where both the men and the women can play in the same venue and in the mm-hmm. same event, obviously in their own divisions,
right.
but is by far the single largest sport, biggest sport in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
No other sport does what tennis can do with combining the best male players and the best female players in one tournament. And so I wanted to do that. And that was a big motivation why we needed to have a bigger facility. We had to expand the locker rooms, press rooms, all of that. So
boys' locker rooms, girls' locker rooms.
Exactly. So we were on that track. But then we had to actually go out and commit ourselves to building the facility. And then with that, we then had to go to both the ATP, the Association of Tennis Professionals, which is the men's governing body of tennis, and the WTA, which is the women's governing body, and try to secure a two-week sanction from each of them and to allow us to combine the two events. That was not an easy task, mm-hmm. but between Raymond and I, we knew enough people in the game, and we were able to, but we had to commit to building the facility. And so the commitment was made up front, and when they saw it, they said, yeah, you guys deserve it, and they gave it to us. I mean, they didn't give it to us. We had to purchase it. It cost us a lot of money to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so today we have, really outside of the four Grand Slams, which I've mentioned, and the event that follows us, Miami and Key Biscayne, it's called the Sony Ericsson Open. And Indian Wells are the only six events in the world, the four Grand Slams and those three are the only six events that actually have that kind of a sanction of men and women for 2 weeks, playing for 2 weeks.
I didn't realize it was that exclusive.
It's very exclusive, and I know a lot of people here in the desert heard about that we were in actually danger of losing the event here and moving it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is we were getting some unbelievable lucrative offers from China and from the Middle East, Dubai to be specific, Dubai and Qatar, to buy our sanction and move it over there because it's hard to get these kinds of sanctions. IMG, who had just gone through a ownership change, wanted to sell the event, and Raymond and I did not. And so they were, we sat down with them and talked, give us a little bit of time and we will find some partners and to buy your 50% ownership, mm-hmm. which we succeeded in doing. That was completed last year for last year's event. And we have some wonderful partners amongst them, Billie Jean King, mm-hmm. Pete Sampras, Chris Evert. So those
just
are pretty...
Just a few little tennis players.
Yeah, and they actually, it wasn't just they contributing their names, they actually invested in the event mm-hmm. considerable amounts of money, and we have a wonderful group of partners, and so we're very, very happy.
But that means they believe in what you're doing here.
They believe in what we were doing, and they also believed in wanting to keep the event there, you know, and the USTA, United States Tennis Association, was a strong participant, and they also stepped up, and because they did not want to see this event leave the United States and go to some other country.
Of course.
So it was, I think we put together a great partnership, and this event is going to be here for a long, long time, at least 20 years anyway.
Until you outgrow this facility, right?
And I have to also, we needed the City of Indian Wells to also participate and help us refinance our stadium, which they did. And so with all of those pieces put together, the investors, the City of Indian Wells, the USDA, we succeeded in keeping the event here.
How many seats are at the stadium?
16,100.
A little bit more than the 10,000 that you had at the Hyatt Grand Champions.
Yeah.
Yes. And plenty of parking.
That is correct.
That's right. Let's talk about the economic impact that the Pacific Life Open has here in the desert. Every March, isn't it?
That's right. The first 2 weeks in March is when the event is being held. About five years ago, we had an economic impact study done, and that showed an economic impact of about $100 million. And so we said, well, it's time, actually, because of what we were doing, we said, let's go ahead and do an economic impact from the 2006 event, and so a new one. And we thought, well, our attendance has grown by so much, we figure the economic impact is going to be somewhere in the $150 million. You know, it's grown by about 50%. When I saw it this year, I was just absolutely amazed. It actually is $219 million.
Really?
This economic impact study is done by George Washington University, who does the economic impact studies for the Olympics, mm-hmm. Super Bowl, a number of big events around them. So we intentionally hired them to do this for us. And it's amazing what it does. And nearly 80% of the people that attend this event come from outside the valley. Mm-hmm. And so it really draws fans who are here. Average stay is about 4 nights. And they're here for the tennis tournament. This is their vacation.
Well, you really almost doubled the economic impact for our valley from going from the Hyatt Grand Champions to the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens.
That is correct. And the nice thing about it is that we're not sold out. We still got we get full in a few sessions, but we're not sold out. So we still have a lot of room to grow, and so that's the good news.
Exactly. Now, when do tickets go on sale for this March?
They have been on sale for a year. Literally, we start selling all of our series tickets, the renewals of our box seats and our series tickets during the week of the tournament or the 2 weeks of the tournament for the following year. So they've been on sale essentially the last 12 months.
Best place is to sell the tickets for the next season at that venue for that year.
That is correct.
Yeah, that works out really well. But what's the phone number if people want to buy tickets for Pacific Life?
Local number here is 200-8000, 760-200-8000, mm-hmm. and there's a 800 number. I believe that's 999.
That's okay. We're all local. We're making local phone calls here.
That's so right. Local 208,000 is the number. Mm-hmm.
Now, you've had some very interesting tennis players play in your tournament.
We've had
everybody.
Exactly. We've had every major tennis player that's held a tennis racket for the last 30 years has played here, and most of the real great ones have won the tournaments, from the Andre Agassiz, Pete Sampras, Chris Evert to Martina Navratilova, Boris Becker's, Roger Federer's, name them.
The who's who of tennis,
that's right.
Exactly. Well, also, something I found out that was very interesting, I didn't know that you can buy a year's membership in the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens to go play tennis and have lessons, or you can, if you're only in town for a week or something, you can go buy court time also from the gardens. So
that's right. You know, even during non-tennis tournament time, we run a full program. We have a membership available for people that want to come and play, and we have great programs, all kinds of leagues, ladies' nights, men's nights, we have a full staff of operates 12 months of the year, and junior programs. We have our National Junior Tennis League program, which is something that I'm very proud of, because that's something that Arthur and I founded back in 1969. Which is to try to bring kids that normally would not get an opportunity to be exposed to the sport of tennis. We actually kind of pull him out of the street and put him on the tennis court, so to speak.
So are you and Raymond out there teaching lessons?
We do, rarely we do, but once in a while we'll do a tennis clinic and we'll do something like that, but not as much. Yeah.
Well, Charlie, we only have about a minute and a half left of this half hour of Talk of the Desert. What's in the future?
Well, I think our tennis tournament, as I said, you know, still has a lot more room to grow. I think both Raymond and I, when we played tennis, we played to be the best we could be number one. That we didn't play to come in second.
Right.
And that's kind of the same attitude that we have about running this tennis tournament. We want to make it the best in the world.
So the Pacific Life Open is March 5th through 18th at the Indian Wells Tennis Gardens. Go and have it's really a great time there. And if you enjoy tennis, it's the place to be.
It's a lot of fun. There's a lot more going on even than just the tennis.
Tell me, what are some of the other things that are going on?
Oh, great. We try to put on some culinary dinners. We've had Joaquin Spichard from Patina Restaurant cook some special meals for some guests. Some wine tastings, retail. We have a great shopping area, some entertainment, music, videos. We have a big video wall screen that you can see all kinds of stuff related to tennis and some non-tennis related. So it's a lot of fun.
Good. Well, I want to thank Charlie Passarell with Indian Wells Tennis Gardens for being my wonderful guest on Talk of the Desert. Good luck with the Pacific Life Open again this year. This is the sixth year since you've been in the gardens, right?
That is correct.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations with your success, and you're welcome back on Talk of the Desert anytime.
Thank you, Melinda. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Charlie. And thank you, audience, for joining us.
Stay right there in your easy chair for 30 minutes of pleasure. Don't you go, it's Melinda's show. It's the Talk of the Desert. I just love coming home at night. Turn around, she's a treasure. Everyone and everywhere I go, she's the talk of the desert.
Melinda Reed's celebrity interviews are seen Fridays at 10 a.m. and Saturdays, Mondays, and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. but only on Time Warner Cable TV 10. For more guest information, visit our website, www.talkofthedesert.tv. where you can now listen and download to your iPods past programs.